Welcome to the Human Centered Leadership Podcast with me, your host, Colm Hay. I have worked in the leadership space for 3 decades, and now I work with organizations and leaders to develop powerful cultures of high value and performance that is built all around their people. We will interview leaders from around the world and at the very top end of their game to explore what emotional intelligence in practice actually looks like and the benefits that it could bring to any team. This is a movement to transform the way that we see leadership and to create powerful cultures where people feel seen, heard, valued and appreciated, and consequently perform to the very best. Why don't you join the movement and subscribe to our podcast? And don't forget to click on notifications to stay up to date with all new content.
Welcome to another episode where I get to speak to incredible leaders from around the globe.
And today I am speaking to Kim Ozell. Kim and I met, I don't know where the first one was. I think it was in Birmingham where I first saw you. We were both speaking at an event called Disrupt HR. We've seen each other several times over where we've both been speaking. And I've always been mesmerized by Kim's content. So Kim, you have got a history of being a stockbroker back in the 80s. We can have a laugh about that because that was the era of the yuppies from how I remember it, and Porsches being driven up and down the M25 as a racetrack. But you have got a wealth of experience around finance, and your talk has always been around the responsibility of an organization and leaders to help their staff when it comes to financial awareness. And I find this a really topical and under-discussed topic because I think it's very, very important. So, Kim, first of all, welcome. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to see you. I've always found this subject really, really powerful from my own personal experience, both as a leader and as a person working in an organization. Now, I remember in the early noughties, I remember being going through a divorce and becoming a single dad all of a sudden, having been married from the age of 18. That's all I knew. So all I ever experienced was working in partnership, if you like, in a marriage. And then when that marriage failed, suddenly there I was as a single dad managing everything, the stuff that I never used to manage because I just focused on my career. And I went through incredible financial difficulties. Suddenly debt started accruing. I had to pay my ex-wife off, and suddenly I was left saddled with a lot of debt. And it used to give me sleepless nights. I used to, you know, there were some of the debts that I couldn't, you know, meet the payments on, and suddenly letters started coming through. It was a horrible time period in my life. Now, thankfully, I'm not living there anymore, but having had a taste of it, this is why I think your talk always resonates with me. I know the pain that I went through when I was going through that. And I had a really responsible job at the time. So I was having to show up to work 100% all of the time, but it's a real challenge, isn't it? And that's sort of what you're saying, that organizations need to be alive to that. So what is your message, really?
So my message is that life happens. You know, we know that life is not perfect, and this is not about getting ready for, you know, a doom and gloom event. It's about being prepared for life, because we know that, you know, the economy throws us curveballs. The pandemic happened and it threw everybody into a state of uncertainty. But we also know that, you know, we have an election every few years, and different political parties will bring different things to the table. Like it or lump it, we go through it. We have children that cost a lot of money. We then have, whether we choose to send them to private school or whether we support them through further education and higher education, that's a big cost. And nobody is telling us about that when we start our family planning and get all excited in a new relationship. And we also have, you know, loved ones that we're going to lose, whether that's parents, whether that's our, you know, children, sadly, whether it's our partners. You know, there are very few things that are certain in life, but we know, you know, as Dickens would say, death and taxes. Was it Dickens or was it Benjamin Franklin? Oh, I don't know. It's Friday morning. I can't remember all of the great names. But, you know, death and taxes, we know that we're going to come across. And 50% of marriages end in divorce. Relationships, you know, they come and go. The average marriage is only 12 years. So, you know, there's a potential for us to have two or three marriages. Each one of those comes with, you know, a financial implication, whether you've got children or not. You've got potentially, you know, one salary coming in to cover the bills temporarily instead of two. You've got uncertainty about how much you've got to pay in terms of maintenance, or whether you can take on, whether the building society will let you take on the mortgage in your own name. You might have to sell and downsize, but all of these things cost money, but they also cost a huge amount of our emotion. And that's the thing that people don't link in when they're having the conversations. They sort of go, oh yeah, you know, Bob's going through a divorce, or, you know, it's a bit tough for them because they're navigating this. But it is those sleepless nights, those thoughts that follow us around, the fact that Absolutely. We are distracted because this is a big deal. And when we go to work and we're not focused on the job, we then come home feeling even more stressed or dejected or not with it or disappointed in ourselves. And then our self-confidence and our you know, it's such a big intertwined sort of set of feelings.
See, this is why I think this subject is so very important. And I'll be honest with you, I talk about human-centric leadership all the time. And I talk about, you know, we need to be conscious and aware of the people that work in our organizations as being human beings. And with being a human, we have these complexities. You know, no one person is the same as the next person, and everyone has complex issues that they bring to the table. And we need to be as aware and as able to work with that as possible. That's what true human-centric cultures are all about. But I've never really thought about it in the context of the financial well-being of our people. And as I'm listening to you now, Kim, I'm wondering, well, what could my organization have done? How could they have supported me? And I'm not entirely sure. So what could, do you think, organizations do to help their people?
Well, we know that so many people are going through, you know, financial issues and worries of one sort or another, but very few people are talking about it. So we often feel that we are on our own. And quite often, the higher up the salary scale or the higher up the career path we go, the more we believe and we think that we should be okay, the more other people look at us and think that we should be okay. But actually, as I said many times before, the more we earn, the more we spend, the more we borrow, the bigger the potential problem is.
I was in a senior position feeling all of that that you just described there.
We end up hiding away from it. We are ashamed. We feel embarrassed. We feel that perhaps we've got something even more wrong that we can't own up to. When in fact, when you start talking about it, other people will go, yeah, I've been there too. I've done that. I thought it was just me. And so if we can make things just generally easier to talk about at home, at work, in team meetings, with our line manager, with with somebody in HR, if you've got an occupational health program, does it include somebody to talk to about your money? Because just because you get the option to talk to somebody about your pension for 10 minutes every year, that doesn't tick the financial well-being box.
Yeah,
that doesn't give people the opportunity, or, you know, there's no point in just having a debt helpline on your intranet. It's too late, and most people are not going to look there. They need to talk about this and be signposted earlier on.
Yeah, so this is about creating a culture where people naturally talk about these kind of issues, where we have a culture that nothing really is a taboo subject. And very often money can be a huge taboo subject, but particularly when you're working in an environment that's maybe a machoistic environment or a hierarchical structure, it's very difficult to be comfortable to talk about these kind of things. And I absolutely support you on a link on your intranet site saying, you know, click here to get some kind of financial advice. It's perhaps a bit too late. We need to keep this as a norm.
And so, you know, it is that culture change. And we've still got many many businesses, and I've worked in many businesses where it is a disciplinary offence to talk about your salary or to talk about your bonuses. And whilst you don't necessarily need to know the pounds, shillings and pence of everybody's income, how do you know if you're being paid fairly? How do you know if as a woman or as a person of colour, you're being paid the same as a white man? How do we know if it is a disciplinary offence to talk about earnings? And what is the message then that you are giving people around money? You're telling them to shut up, to stop asking, to, you know, if you have that fear, if I find out what somebody else is being paid, now what do I do with this information? Now I can't go to somebody and ask for pay wise because they'll know that I know this information. I've got it from somewhere. And it's when we have a culture that is you know, that strong, you know, how on earth are we going to come in and say, do you know what, actually, I had a really bad night's sleep last night because, to be honest, I've maxed out the credit card and I don't know how to tell my missus that we're not going to go on holiday this year, because they are the real life issues.
Yeah, absolutely. They're completely real life issues, you know, and we seem to go through cycles where external factors also impact on us. I mean, we went through the 2008 credit crunch. We've gone through, you know, everything that's come out of the whole pandemic. We had the pandemic in and of itself. And then after that, we've had the recession. So these kind of things happen in cycles. And as you say, then there could be external factors around political parties. You know, we're going to general election later on this year. So when, if a new party comes in, they may well have different views on how the country's finances should work. And that might have an impact on us as well. So there's all of this going on. And some of it is stuff that we take ownership for because it's of our own making. Other times, and a lot of the times, it's because of external factors. But we feel embarrassed, don't we? We feel embarrassed to talk about these kind of things. And I think organizations have a sense of embarrassment enshrined within their cultures that this is a subject that we shouldn't talk about. So, I mean, how do you work with organizations to get this to become a norm, as it should be?
Well, I talk about it as much as I possibly can at, you know, with people like you and at events like Disrupt HR and, you know, going to networking events and you know, putting myself forward as speakers to try and get people just to see that actually this is a real issue that we, you know, if I can get people to hold their hand up in the room or see them nodding going, yes, that's me, that's a really good start. Mm. But, you know, with the whole well-being stuff, what we've seen is this great move in certain areas. You know, mental health, another of the great taboos, you know, has been uplifted in terms of its position in, you know, budgets and that sort of thing. People have started to realise that it's really important and they're allocating budgets to it. But what we have is this half of the job, because people are doing this great work with mental health first aid, mental health, you know, awareness weeks, all of these sort of things. But financial implications, such as the ones we've been talking about, where you get really stressed about money that's come about as a result of everyday life stuff, that causes mental health issues. Or it certainly doesn't help if you're suffering from a poor mental health situation. Money worries are going to add to that.
Oh, goodness,
so we've
yes.
got money stuff that either causes or enhances negative mental health. But we've also got at the other side of that sort of, you know, curve, we've got mental health issues cause money worries. Because what do you do when you are feeling low?
100%.
You spend to get a pick me up. You go for that retail therapy. You spend money you can't afford. It doesn't make you feel better anyway because it's, you know, it's not addressing the issue. But it's a cycle. And if we're only looking at the mental health side of it and not addressing the financial aspects of it, cause or effect, then businesses are only doing half the job. Look at the whole thing. You know, take a holistic view and. And if we're looking at well-being of any sort, whether that's, you know, menopause, whether that's, you know, mental health, whether that's family, you know, well-being or community well-being, why the heck are we not looking at finances? Because I'm sorry, You know, paddleboarding with your team is great, but it doesn't solve the problem. Providing fresh fruit in the staff room is brilliant, but it doesn't solve the problem.
But here's the thing with that kind of stuff. I think many organizations feel it's easier to do paddleboarding. It's easier to put out fruit or, you know, give. I remember once walking into an organization and I had a meeting with the head of HR. And when I walked into this big, huge open plan office, it was really lovely. You know, it bright colors everywhere. The meeting room was designed as a fairy tale meeting room. There were sleep pods and things like that. So I asked this head of HR, I said, so what's your sickness rates? Oh, we don't know. I says, what's your attrition rate? Oh, we don't know. How many people, how can you say that your people are performing any better? Well, we don't know. We don't measure this kind of thing. And I think, well, hang on a minute. Are you just doing this just to feel good, to feel that you've achieved something? And I remember listening to a talk, and we've got him coming on the podcast soon, a professor at Anglia Ruskin University who's done some work around well-being strategies in the workplace. And he says, a lot of the well-being strategies don't actually work. And actually, sometimes these well-being practices can be counterproductive. And I think that's because as part of this whole holistic well-being stuff, we're not addressing realistic core issues, some of the causal factors behind poor well-being, mental well-being. And as you quite rightly say, finance is part of it. There are a lot of people out there who are going to be having some kind of money worry, whether it's small, whether it's large. You know, it's an independent and individual thing, isn't it? And people do rely on money, and we are in a state of an economy at the moment where a lot of people are struggling.
And it is very, very easy to get into debt. People, you know, you only need to spend £24 a day that you can't afford. And by the end of the year, you're 10 grand in debt.
Wow.
You know, £24, £25 a day. And people go, oh, you know, but that's just irresponsible. But think about it. If your income is taken up by your bills and things that you are committed to, and then you've got to put fuel in the car to get to work, you've got to pay £10 or £12 a day for the multi-story car park, you buy a coffee in on your way, you know, to work to get you started for the day, and perhaps you've forgotten to buy lunch, so you get, you know, grab a meal deal from Boots or Tesco's or wherever. Very quickly you've spent £20 or £30 a day, and you've tapped your credit card each time. And, you know, then you take the kids out at the weekend because you feel guilty about the fact that you haven't spent time with them during the week because you've been so busy trying to work extra in order to pay your bills and keep on top of everything. So at the weekend, you get caught up with, you know, Mum, can we just? And it's like, yeah, whatever. And you pay for the drive-through. You put it on your credit card. You take them to a play area or whatever it might be. And it's not irresponsible spending necessarily that gets people into the problem. It's the not really paying attention to the fact. It's a bit like eating an extra Kit Kat a day. You'll suddenly find that you're 3 stone overweight. But it happens gradually. But once you're in there, £10,000 worth of credit card debt at a rate of, you know, 25 or 35% APR is not going to go away.
And then, of course, there's the challenge, isn't there, that when you've got £10,000 of debt, the repayments that you're making adds an additional burden to you on a monthly basis, let's say.
Yeah, well, it could be £300 or £400 a month. You know, that sort of payment, if you're just making the minimum payment on a £10,000 Barclay card, it's going to be best part of £400 a month.
Wow.
You know, that on top of, you know, if you were using your credit card because you didn't have the money there in the first place, then how are you going to find that money? No wonder people are going to work stressed.
Yeah.
So isn't it the right thing to do to teach your employees how to manage their money better so that they don't need to use that credit card, or that they can manage their other expenses better and they can tap into the emotions, the guilt, the shame, the feeling around it so that they don't hide away from it?
You're not actually saying that this is about the organization helping you to resolve your money problems necessarily. What you're saying is that if you create an environment where these conversations are easier had and less taboo and less sort of, they are much more comfortable conversations, then actually it comes back down to the age-old adage, a problem shared is a problem halved. creating that conversation allows you to connect with other people, see that you're not on your own, and also then to be able to speak to other people where you might get a solution around that.
You know, my vision, I have this vision. I'm full of crazy visions because I want to fix the world financially, and you know, it's a bit of a big job. But in the same way as we have mental health first aiders in every workplace now, whether it's a building site or a, you know, police station or a hospital ward or a city centre office, there are mental health first aiders. Hairdressers have them, you know, retailers have them. I want the same with finance. Somebody on the shop floor, literally, who can like spot the signs that somebody is struggling, or you know, is somebody cancelling things at the last minute, that they're making excuses about why they can't, you know, go out for drinks on a Friday night with everybody else.
Yeah.
Are they, you know, can you tell that they haven't got funds available when people are going around asking for sponsorship for Race for Life? You know, oh, it's only a couple of pounds, it's only a fiver. But you know, if you can spot the signs that somebody doesn't want to put into that envelope, not because they're stingy, but perhaps it's because that fiver is a fiver that's already allocated to something else within their family.
Yeah.
And if they put the money into, you know, Bob's retirement envelope or, you know, Katie's Race for Life fund or whatever, it might mean that their child has to go without, or that the credit card has to come out again.
Or that they can't put petrol in their car to travel to work.
That's it. And you know, just having that greater awareness from the ground floor up means that over the water cooler or over the kettle, somebody can say, do you want to go grab a coffee? And signpost them to the right help, so that the debt management or the financial management or just being able to get it off your chest happens at that stage, not when it is too late, not when we've gone pop, not when we've got burnout from working extra hours that we're needing to take on because we've got a £400 credit card minimum payment to take on.
Listening to you, this just seems so real. It just seems so absolutely critically necessary. And I hope there are listeners out there who get this and say, do you know what? As a leader, I need to step up because I need to create this environment for my people, because this stuff is happening all the time. I know I'm hearing stories. I do a lot of work around cultures within organizations, and I'm hearing stories of, you know, people within our public sector, critical key workers like nurses, police officers, fire officers, having to go to food banks because they cannot afford to feed themselves or their families. And these are people that we can't live without. These are people who are critical to society. And it's not just in those areas. This is, if it's happening there, it's happening elsewhere, is the way I see it. And it's this hidden shame that we sort of hide behind that we're not acknowledging.
And it is life threatening. And I'm not being melodramatic when I say that. But, you know, if I went to work with money worries, if I didn't have my eye on the ball and I made a mistake at work as a stockbroker, it cost my firm money.
Yes.
And I would get a rollicking and a disciplinary depending on the mistake. It would cost my firm money. That would be it. If you've got a lorry driver who hasn't slept because they're worrying about money, they are driving, you know, a lethal weapon.
Yeah.
If they fall asleep because they are stressed, or you know, if they take their eye off the ball, it may end somebody's life. If you've got a nurse or a surgeon or a firefighter who's not on the ball because they're worrying about money and they've got somebody's life in their hands, literally, what happens? There is the real danger that, you know, that lives are being lost, not just lost in terms of suicide, you know, attempts and suicide rates and, you know, mental health issues and that sort of thing, but other people's lives, unconnected people's lives, may be lost as well because of something as simple as money worries. So it's really, really, really important that businesses and organisations of any sort start paying more attention, because the rest of the stuff is vital. All of the other wellbeing stuff is important. I'm not diminishing that at all. Otherwise, you're just sticking a sticky plaster over a broken bone, and it's not going to work.
And here's the other thing that I've learned, Kim, is that We often think of financial worries being at the lower end of an organization, those who are less paid. But I work a lot with leaders. I do a lot of coaching with leaders. I am surprised and shocked sometimes that those who are perhaps even some of the best paid in the organization can also have significant financial worries that impede the way that they can do their job. And gives them sleepless nights and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, I guess I'm more alive to it because I've been there. I've experienced it, maybe not to the extremes that some people do, but I've experienced it. I've had those sleepless nights. I've had those worries. I've had those letters. So maybe I have a lot more empathy and a lot more understanding, but I think this is happening at all ends of the organization. It needs to be something that is a human thing, and it matters not whether you're the CEO or whether you are the ground floor worker. Everybody will go through this at some level or another. You made a really good point earlier on about, you know, even if you're on the best wage, actually with that best wage comes more expenditure.
We all live to our means. You know, we've been brought up pretty much to do that. So, and one of the biggest expenses, of course, is our mortgage. And so when we get that bigger salary, we qualify for a bigger mortgage, which most of us generally take up at some point in our life. And we take up that bigger mortgage on the expectation that the property will grow in terms of value and our salary will continue to go up. But of course, what we've seen in the last 10 or 12 years, particularly since the banking crisis and even more so through the pandemic, was this really artificially low set of interest rates. We've had a whole generation who've only known interest rates at less than, you know, 1% and have been able to fix their rates at, you know, 1.5 or 1.9% or something for 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I bought my first house at 18 when interest rates were 16.9%. So for me, there's always that, you know, knowledge, but there's a whole load of people on good salaries, but who've suddenly seen the fixed rates come to an end and their mortgage payments are doubling or even tripling. Well, it doesn't matter how much you earn. If you've got your biggest expense going up threefold, that is a strain on your finances. And if you've also already committed to putting your children through public school, you know, you've got some really tough decisions to make. And people might say, oh, first world problems, look at you in your big house, driving your Tesla and, you know, with your kids at private school. But if you are worrying about how you are going to fund that, I know people who have taken their lives because they are afraid of the shame and the judgment if they have to go and pull those kids out of school or if they have to sell the house. And so it doesn't matter what the numbers are. The feelings are still there. The judgment is probably even more so. And the likelihood that these people are going to talk about it is even tinier because, you know, they know that people are judging. And we've got to stop this. We've got to open it up. And we've got to accept, you know, that money affects everybody, every single person, and therefore money worries do. And if you've got two great earners, you know, you might have a power couple, a couple of kids at private school, brilliant, you know, everybody thinks that they are the ideal, that relationship breaks down. Or one of, you know, cancer hits one of them or goes through the menopause and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, there's a difference there. There's suddenly only one income coming in instead of two, but you've still got the same bills. You've still got the same mortgage. You've still got the same fees to pay. And, you know, it might be temporarily, if you're going through a divorce, one person might have to be funding two houses, you know, or paying rent on a property that is far in excess of the already large mortgage that they've got, while you go through the courts and navigate and come up with a financial arrangement that you can then work and live by.
What I've really enjoyed about this conversation, it's real. It's a real conversation about real issues and stuff that we don't often talk about. And, you know, when I pulled this podcast together, it was to have real conversation about human stuff and human stuff in the workplace. And if an organization truly, truly, truly wants to change its culture to be much more human-centric, then I think having an awareness and doing something around creating an environment where people feel comfortable talking about their financials is really critical. And Kim, I want to thank you for bringing this to people, this awareness. And I think it's such much needed, it's such a much needed subject. And I'm glad we've discussed it today. I really genuinely am. If anybody wants to contact you, Kim, how can they grab hold of you?
So you can come and find me on LinkedIn. There aren't too many people with my surname, so I'm not too difficult to find. So Kim Uzel on LinkedIn. Or you can visit the financialwellbeingacademy.com, which will give you some more information about financial wellbeing at work and how you can bring that in. And there's another website, financialchampion.co.uk, which is specifically all about bringing people in at that ground floor level to train them to spot the signs to make a difference early on. So a number of ways you can find me.
Well, I think that would be a really good starting point for many organizations, just to get a bit like your fire stewards, your coaches that you might have in your organization, just send some people over towards Kim. Get them to become the resident experts to pick up signs, and then you can build on that strategy to create a better environment. Kim, I want to thank you so much once again. I think this has been a really, really powerful subject. I really enjoyed it. I knew it was going to be, and we didn't even get around to talking about being a stockholder in the 80s. But thank you so much. All the very best.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please do subscribe and click on notifications for new content. And of course, connect with me on LinkedIn. Take care. Have a great day.